The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to DNA ID, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family, Missing Persons, Scene of the Crime,
Zodiac Speaking,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective, and Campus Killings. All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
On Valentine's Day, 1982, an Arizona Department of Public Safety officer was investigating an accident report about a motor vehicle incident that happened earlier. He pulled over his cruiser on westbound I-40 at milepost 151.8 near the Coconino County line. This was about 11 miles west of Williams, a tiny town known as the gateway to the Grand Canyon. The officer climbed the small embankment and was looking for a tire that had reportedly come off a vehicle in the incident when he saw something lying among the scrub brush under a large juniper tree about 25 feet off the roadway. There on the ground was the body of a blonde-haired female lying face down. She was deceased and partially decayed but had no immediately apparent signs of injury. Coconino County Sheriff's investigators were called to the scene, and they arrived and took it in. It didn't look as though this young woman had walked to where she lay. First of all, her bare feet. No socks or shoes were found, and it was chilly this time of year. Second, there was nothing around. It was the middle of nowhere. And third, some of the belt loops on the young woman's jeans were broken. Yes, she was clothed, partially. Her jeans were on, but a bra size 36C and sweater, presumed to be hers, lay near her body. The investigators surmised that the young woman had been discarded by a vehicle that had pulled over on the side of the road and dragged her body to where it lay. The highway in this area was surrounded on both sides by a small shoulder, and then berms arose parallel to the roadway on either side. Contemporary photos of the scene show the berms covered with partially melted snow. Someone had to pull over on the roadside and drag this young woman up and over the slippery berm's edge to under one of the trees on the westbound side of the highway. It was thought possible that her sweater sleeves had been used to drag her by the arms, and when her sweater came off over her head, the person dragging her switched to her belt loops. But that didn't explain the report I found in the Arizona Daily Sun, which I cannot confirm, that her bra, also found on the ground, had been cut open. And some reports also state that a white handkerchief was found, but Coconino investigators told me they would not confirm this, as some elements of the case remain holdback information. All of this dragging activity indicated to the investigators that the young woman was dead when she was discarded. She had died elsewhere, and by putting her away from the roadway among brush under a large tree, whoever left her there was clearly hoping she would not be found. She would be very unlikely to be seen by passing motorists. It was 100% pure luck that the DPS trooper had parked where he did and stumbled on her remains. Insect and animal predation had not been kind to the young woman, whose name was unknown as no identifying items whatsoever were found with her. She was quickly nicknamed Valentine Sally because of the date on which she was found. Valentine Sally was autopsied and information documented about her physical characteristics in hopes that either a distinguishing feature or an accurate overall description would lead to someone recognizing her. That latter would be a challenge, though. Her face was described as unrecognizable, with much of the exposed flesh eaten away. Her right ear had been removed, too, and the medical examiner deemed that to be attributable to predators rather than the actions of a human. She was also quite decomposed, to the extent that the medical examiner guessed she'd been dead for a week, if not more. Her cause of death was theorized to be asphyxiation, as there was no visible trauma to her body and her hyoid bone was not broken. She was too decomposed to detect petechiae, but it was an educated guess. I was told that the standard operating procedure was to do a tox screen, and I can only assume that the results showed that Valentine Sally had not OD'd, as the case was categorized as a homicide with probable suffocation. Here is the physical description of Valentine Sally as documented by the investigators. She was a white female in the age range of 15 to 19, which was later revised upwards to 16 to 23. She was 5'4" tall, 120 pounds. She had blonde, straight hair, about 9.5 inches long. She had visible scars on the top of her left foot, a 2-inch diagonal scar on the back of her right thigh, 3 moles above her right breast, and 1 mole on her upper left leg. Her left ear was pierced, but her right ear was missing, so whether it too was pierced was unknown. The investigators were unable to obtain usable fingerprints from Valentine Sally, so hopes of identifying her that way were dashed. Her dental work was photographed and noted in detail, in case the medical examiner's office got the opportunity to compare Valentine Sally's teeth with dental records of a missing person. Teeth number 1, 16, 17, and 32 had not erupted. And tooth number 19, the first lower left molar, had been drilled in preparation for a root canal approximately 1 week prior to her death. She was walking around with a large hole in her tooth that was likely quite painful. The medical examiner collected blood and hair samples from Valentine Sally. Then she was kept frozen while the investigators tried to figure out who she was so someone could claim her body. Responding Coconino County Sheriff's Office Detective Sergeant Jack Judd was the lead investigator in the case. In those days, the way for agencies to disseminate and gather information was through bulletins to other agencies and through media releases to the public. Local papers ran blurbs about the unidentified young woman, saying the Coconino authorities were looking for information about who she was. Her clothing was described in detail as being a red and white horizontal striped pullover sweater, size 9 designer Seasons brand blue jeans, and a size 36C bra. Well, the media push for information worked. A college student at Northern Arizona University who saw the news came forward and reported that he believed he had given a ride to Valentine Sally. He said that on February 2nd, as he was traveling north, he had picked up a hitchhiker near Cordis Junction. This girl had not told the driver her name, but had revealed some information that indicated she might be a runaway. She said she'd been living with friends in Phoenix and working as a dishwasher. Now she was on her way to New Jersey. She cited some urgent family problems as the reason for her travels. She'd gotten a ride with someone heading toward Prescott as far as Cordis Junction. She hoped to get a ride with an East Coast-bound trucker at the busy Little America truck stop in Flagstaff. The hitchhiker met the description of Valentine Sally. She was 16 or 17 years old, a Caucasian teen with blonde hair, wearing a red and blue or white and blue sweater and designer jeans. And what's more, the hitchhiker had told the driver she hitched a ride with that she had started root canal treatment on her left side molar. Remember that Valentine Sally's teeth bore evidence that she had had a tooth drilled for a root canal. I asked Coconino County Sheriff's Detective Troy Short whether the driver, who has never been publicly identified, indicated that Valentine Sally was carrying a bag of any sort. It seemed unlikely to me that a teenager would hit the road across country with no personal possessions in tow. If she did have a bag, the driver did not mention it to the 1982 investigators. Anyway, to this day, investigators don't know for certain that the young woman the driver picked up was Valentine Sally. To me, it seems almost certain that it was. Hitchhikers were a dime a dozen back then, but the driver mentioning the tooth pain, something that was not released publicly, kind of seals the deal. Investigators also canvassed area truck stops to try to find any witnesses who might have encountered Valentine Sally. They couldn't find anyone who reported seeing a driver pulled over on the side of the road and dragging a body, but that wasn't surprising. Whoever had dumped Valentine Sally had been clever. The area where he pulled over was frequently used by truckers as a pull-off spot to cool their brakes and perhaps take a rest. It would be the norm for trucks to be pulled over there, and if he did it under cover of darkness, it's likely no one would have noticed. Then the police came up with a very important piece of information. They were stopping in at truck stops and asking stuff about Valentine Sally, carrying her striped sweater with them. And sure enough, Valentine Sally had possibly been seen at the Monte Carlo truck stop in Ash Fork, Arizona, around 3 a.m. on February 4, 1982. This was one of the first places police checked, as it was just a mile down the road from where Valentine Sally was found. Patty Wilkins's family owned the truck stop, and she was the night shift waitress on duty that night. She remembered that a teenage girl, about 15 or 16 or 17, came in the middle of the night in the company of a significantly older man in a large hat. Patty assumed the man was a father, an uncle, or some other relative. The teenager did not appear to be frightened or under duress, but she didn't order any food, and her jaw appeared swollen. The man she was with explained that she had a very bad toothache because she had had a tooth drilled for a root canal. Patty got the girl a baby aspirin, which she ground up and placed in the hole in a molar on the left side of her mouth. Traces of the aspirin were still there when the medical examiner conducted Valentine Sally's autopsy. Patty later told KIRO about telling all this to the 1982 detective who came to the truck stop, quote, "I said, we crushed up a baby aspirin, that's all I had, and we put it on that tooth. He said, what side was it on? I said, left side. He said, that's our girl." Police were convinced that Patty had indeed seen the young woman they had found on the side of the road. They pressed her to remember some details about the man Valentine Sally was with. She said he was a white male between 60 and 62 years old. He was wearing a felt cowboy hat with a large peacock feather stuck in the front brim. She assumed it was a peacock feather because it had a large blue center. He was wearing a brown vest with a patchwork design. According to the Arizona Republic, Valentine Sally may have been in the company of two men, the other man being a black male. Patty said the white man in the hat seemed to be very concerned about the fact that Valentine Sally had a toothache, which is why she assumed he was a caring relative. Patty's information was very, very important in helping to establish the time of death for Valentine Sally. Remember that the medical examiner had estimated that she'd been dead for more than a week. She was found on February 14th. Patty had seen her on February 4th. The truck stop was a mile from where she was found. This all made it very likely that Valentine Sally had died very soon after leaving the truck stop. Also, note that if indeed Valentine Sally had had her tooth drilled out for a root canal, it was probable that she was scheduled to return to the dentist to have the remainder of the treatment. One does not typically travel across country in the midst of a root canal. This called into question whether Valentine Sally was really heading to New Jersey, as she had told the driver who picked her up, or whether she was planning on returning somewhere in the area to finish her treatment.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
A local forensic artist prepared a sketch of Valentine Sally, showing her with blue eyes, as recalled by Patty. A sketch of the man seen with Valentine Sally, the white man in the cowboy getup, was also done. The sketches were distributed at truck stops, teletypes were sent to other agencies, and detectives pored over missing persons reports and tips called in. By May, when they had failed to identify her, Valentine Sally was buried at a cemetery in Williams. Graveside services were held for her on May 12th, attended by strangers who cared. By the time of her burial, Coconino County Sheriff's Detective Sergeant Jack Judd said that he had compared the description of Valentine Sally to 701 missing persons reports thus far. 692 of them he had ruled out. That left 9 that he was still following up on. One of the leads he was chasing had come all the way from Buffalo, New York. Judd told the Arizona Daily Sun, quote, "A truck driver called and said a composite sketch of our victim looked very similar to a missing persons flyer he saw at Sam's truck stop in Buffalo," end quote. Arizona's obviously very far from upstate New York, but if Valentine Sally were hitching a ride with truckers, as she had indicated to the Northern Arizona University driver, she could have been almost anywhere in the contiguous United States, including Arizona, within a 48-hour period. Judd said later that the investigators were operating on the assumption that the girl, nicknamed Valentine Sally, was a runaway. They didn't have any missing persons reports that met her exact description, and runaways in this era were often unreported. Another lead that was followed up was a tip about a trucker who looked exactly like the sketch that had been prepared from Patty's description of the man in the cowboy hat with a feather. This man reportedly had a young, pretty blonde wife who could be Valentine Sally. The investigators tracked down the trucker in Flagstaff and learned that his wife was alive and well. That lead was a bust, and so were many, many more. As I mentioned, the primary means of human remains identification back in those days was fingerprints, dental records, or facial reconstruction. Valentine Sally had no prints, but she had teeth which could be used to compare to reports of missing persons. And one came along in 1984 that looked like a great fit to Valentine Sally. Melody Cutlip had run away from her Florida home in 1980. Her mother had filed a missing persons report for her. 18-year-old Melody fit the description of Valentine Sally, a blonde teenage girl with blue eyes, about the same height and weight. Lieutenant Jack Judd was checking missing persons reports from around the country, reportedly as many as 1,600 of them, when he came across Melody's. He sent the photos of Melody to University of New Mexico forensic odontologist Homer Campbell for comparison against photos of Valentine Sally. In short, Dr. Campbell created computer-enhanced images of Valentine Sally's skull and compared them to the images he had for Melody, and he declared them a match. Valentine Sally was Melody Cutlip. The Coconino County Sheriff's Office accepted the identification, and Detective Judd traveled to Florida to notify Melody's family. He showed them everything he had compiled in Valentine Sally's file. I'm not sure why Melody's mom refused to believe that Valentine Sally was her daughter. Perhaps it was mother's intuition. I read that it was the moles and scars on Valentine Sally, which Melody did not have. Perhaps Arizona was simply so far from Florida she didn't think it possible. Her daughter had traveled such a distance. Perhaps it was simply denial. But she was adamant that Valentine Sally was not her Melody and declined to have the body shipped to her. Patty Wilkins raised $187 to pay for a headstone for Melody, which was engraved with Melody Cutlip and Valentine Sally. A death certificate was issued for Melody, and the Valentine Sally case was closed. Perhaps Arizona was simply so far from Florida, she didn't think it possible that her daughter had traveled such a distance. Perhaps it was simply denial, but she was adamant that Valentine Sally was not her Melody, and she declined to have the body shipped to her. So, Valentine Sally / Melody was buried in Williams. Patty Wilkins, the waitress, raised $187 to pay for a headstone for Melody, which was engraved with Melody Cutlip and Valentine Sally. They held a funeral for Melody, and Patty contributed flowers and some of her own clothing for Valentine Sally to be buried in. A death certificate was issued for Melody, and the Valentine Sally case was closed. Imagine how Melody Cutlip's mother felt when Melody mailed her a letter in 1986. She was alive and well. She was engaged and was traveling the country as a crafts salesperson. She was most definitely not the dead teenager found on the side of I-40 in Arizona 4 years earlier. Someone was buried under the Melody Cutlip headstone and remained that way despite the family reporting to Arizona authorities that Melody had been found. In Coconino County, Valentine Sally's case was reopened. She was exhumed on April 29, 1987 to obtain more information. Detective Judd re-entered her into various missing persons databases to get the word back out there that he once again had a Jane Doe on his hands. Detective Judd retired in 1993, having worked the case for 11 years with nothing to show for his efforts. Reports are that he spent more than 1,000 hours of his own spare time trying to identify Valentine Sally. The AP reported, quote, Lieutenant Jack Judd of the Coconino County Sheriff's Office went through some 5,000 missing person reports trying to determine who she was. The next article I found on the case was dated September 1997. 15 years had passed since Valentine Sally had been found outside Williams, Arizona, on that lonely Valentine's Day in 1982. The police still followed the occasional lead, but the investigation was essentially at a standstill. The investigators still maintained the file and updated it as to every lead they looked into, but they were pretty sporadic now, and none of the dozens of avenues they had explored got them any closer to figuring out who Valentine Sally was, how she died, and how she ended up under a tree on the side of the interstate. They continued to circulate the artist's sketch of her and to check national computer databases against missing persons reports to see if she had turned up. I thought this was an interesting quote in the 1997 article in the Arizona Daily Sun discussing the case. Quote, Coconino County Sheriff's Department Captain Rex Sturmer hopes a future advance in technology might be just what's needed to solve the mystery. Who knows what they're working on today, he said. Well, fast forward to 2008. By this point, Coconino County had obtained a $304,000 grant of federal funds to pay for updated DNA testing in hopes of solving the 37 open murder and death cases in the region. The sheriff's office had assembled a cold case squad consisting of retired law enforcement officers and other criminal investigators. Their goal was to arrange for DNA testing of items and evidence in these older, unsolved cases, 29 of which were known homicides, and to follow up with the necessary investigative work. This all according to the Arizona Daily Sun. Priority was to be given to the unidentified human remains. It was hoped that profiles could be obtained from the remains, and the profiles could then be sent to the University of North Texas. Their Health Science Center for Human Identification, in partnership with the National Institute of Justice, maintains NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. This system helps investigators resolve cases by matching long-term missing persons with unidentified human remains.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In 2013, retired FBI agent Chuck Jones, who was one of the volunteer investigators working for the Cold Case and Missing Persons Unit of the Coconino County Sheriff's Office, was still actively working the Valentine Sally case. He told the Arizona Daily Sun, quote, We've got no idea who she is. Detective Jones saw to it that DNA testing was completed on Valentine Sally, using a sample of biological material taken at her autopsy, and she was entered into the federal CODIS Unidentified Human Remains database. That way, if any family members had submitted DNA, Valentine Sally could be identified through a family match. But no DNA from relatives was matched to her. Eventually, Valentine Sally was listed in pretty much every database there is, NCMEC, NCIC, and NAMIS. NCMEC also released two facial reconstructions made from CT scans of Valentine Sally's skull. And Carl Kopelman, the well-known forensic sketch artist, also created an image of Valentine Sally that was released to the public. In 2015, Detective Jones got a call from a Michigan woman looking for her niece. DNA showed Valentine Sally wasn't her niece, Carol Ann, but the inquiry showed that listing Valentine Sally in the databases was working. People looking for their missing loved ones or persons missing from their jurisdictions could find her description and cross-check it against their missing person. But these temporary boosts of hope always led to the same outcome. None of them were Valentine Sally. Was no one looking for her? By the way, Carol Ann Cole was found when Bossier Doe, found in Bellevue, Bossier Parish, Louisiana in 1981, was determined to be her. Carol Ann's murder remains unsolved. In February 2021, 39 years after Valentine Sally was found, there was news. Investigators from Coconino County, working with the Arizona Department of Public Safety, had secured funding from NCMEC to pay for a genealogical analysis in Valentine Sallie's case. A SNP profile was prepared by a private lab from one of the blood samples still in evidence from Valentine Sallie's remains. Then, the Arizona authorities used renowned independent genealogist Barbara Ray Venter, who identified Joseph DeAngelo as the likely Golden State Killer, to perform the forensic genealogy analysis on Valentine Sallie's DNA. Dr. Ray Venter was quickly able to locate a first cousin of Valentine Sallie who lived in the St. Louis area. The Coconino County cold case team then built out the family tree to identify a family in St. Louis with six daughters, who were in the right age range to have been Valentine Sallie in 1982. They were the daughters of Isla and Donald Eaton, Karen, Deborah, Donna, Barbara, Carolyn, and Catherine. One of them had no proof of life after 1981. Valentine Sallie was Carolyn Celeste Eaton, born on October 1, 1964, in St. Louis, Missouri. According to records I found online, her father was Donald H. Eaton and her mother was Isla M. Flaus Eaton. Donald was a veteran who died in 1978 at age 49. He was from a family deeply rooted in Missouri. Carolyn's mother, Isla, was from the Flaus family rooted in Illinois. Her father, Harry, was born there in 1901, her grandfather as well in 1872, and her great-grandfather in 1848. Her mother had an equally distinct maiden name, which I can't pronounce, but is probably Zetchi. Her father, Herman, was born in Illinois in 1860. I imagine with these surnames and deeply rooted regionally based families, the genealogy on the maternal side was somewhat easier than we have seen in some other cases. Also, since a first cousin was located, the family tree did not need to be built out past the grandparent level. Carolyn's mother, Isla, died in 1997. Coconino County Sheriff's Lieutenant Jason Lurkins said that investigators flew to St. Louis to speak with Carolyn's sisters and other relatives and obtain DNA samples that confirmed the identification of Carolyn. They learned that in late 1981, the family was living in Bellefontaine, Nabors, Missouri. Mr. Eaton had passed away 3 years earlier. In the time period January to March 1981, three more family members, Carolyn's maternal grandparents and her uncle, all died. Then, sometime between Christmas and New Year's Eve, 1981, her mother arrived home and caught Carolyn in the house with two men unfamiliar to the family. An argument ensued. Carolyn said, "I'm out of here," and she walked out. She was 17. Her mother and sisters never saw her again. Carolyn was found well over 1,000 miles away just 2 months later. But the family had no idea about that. They had filed a runaway report for her back in 1981, but it never progressed to a missing persons investigation. And over the years, that file had gotten lost or misplaced. When the 2021 investigators approached the Bellefontaine Neighbors Police about the case, that agency had no available records to produce. Some of their retired investigators remembered the family and the case of the teen runaway, but that was it. I did see reports that Carolyn had a history of running away and a juvenile record, but I cannot confirm that as I was not permitted to access these records. Lieutenant Lurkin said that when the investigators arrived to speak to the Eaton family, quote, "We told one family member we were investigating a missing persons case and they asked, 'Is this about Carolyn?' And when they told the Eatons their theory that Valentine Sallie was Carolyn and how they had arrived at this conclusion, quote, the family members were awestruck. I believe that a DNA kinship test from one or more of Carolyn's sisters confirmed her identity. Lieutenant Lurkins told the Daily Sun that the family made peace with the news of Carolyn's death. They had assumed, after not hearing from her for nearly 40 years, that she was dead. Detective Troy Short told me that the family has asked for privacy and he respected their wishes by not talking about them with me. So I can only imagine their feelings at learning that Carolyn hadn't lived her life. She'd been slain by someone unknown within 2 months of leaving the family. Who knows if maybe, like Melody Cutlip, she would have eventually returned home and been reunited with her family. I hate to think about her fear and regrets as her assailant choked or smothered her to death. She was really just a child." Patty Wilkins, the waitress at the truck stop, spoke to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch after Carolyn was identified. She expressed her regret at not intervening in what she had discovered was almost certainly a dangerous situation for the young girl in the truck stop restaurant. She said, I could have pulled her off that truck. I could have forced her to stay with me. I could have called 911. I could have done a million things that I didn't do. But of course, how was Patty to know that Carolyn was in danger? She didn't appear to be frightened or under duress. But police do believe she was killed shortly after leaving the restaurant that night. When Carolyn's identification was confirmed and the St. Louis area family finally had an answer to what happened to her, CBS 5 Flagstaff interviewed the Eatons' neighbors. This from their coverage, quote, "I just knew that the family was terribly upset that Carolyn ran away, but nothing was ever found or nothing turned up about her," said neighbor Peggy Harpke, who lives across the street on Bliss Drive, where the family live. Harpke is still friends with Eaton's sister and said this news brings the family some closure after all this time. "It won't ever bring her back, but it did provide a lot of closure for the family, and I think that means a whole lot," she said. St. Louis County Missing Persons Detective Tom Taylor told the Post-Dispatch, quote, "It is an absolute reminder that hope springs eternal for police investigators and someone with a missing family member." Coconino County Sheriff Jim Driscoll said, "I'm just so proud of our folks," adding that the cold case unit spent thousands of hours over the years working to identify Valentine Sally. "To have her identified is huge. The family now knows what happened to their loved one," he told 12 News. He continued, "You always have those ones that haunt you. They linger, and you never forget them. Until you can identify a victim, it's really difficult to identify a suspect." A statement from the sheriff's office reads, quote, "Now that the victim has been identified, detectives are working leads that have been developed to identify any possible suspects," end quote. The case remains under investigation as a homicide. Speaking of homicide and suspects, I was told that Coconino investigators have recently done work to exclude some people mentioned in the case file. One of these was the college student who picked up Carolyn hitchhiking. I was informed that he was excluded by DNA testing. Of course, my ears perked up because this means that the investigators have male DNA in this case. Detective Short told me that his agency has conducted extensive DNA testing on the items they still have in evidence. This includes Carolyn's clothing, and I'm guessing may include a sexual assault kit. I was told that they have a small amount of DNA and are wisely waiting for advancements in DNA technology so they don't use it all up by additional testing. Now that we know who Carolyn was, I can only wonder what she was doing so far from home. She clearly wanted to be independent and left home when she was challenged there. Who was she traveling with, if anyone? How did she end up in Arizona? Why had she left in the midst of a root canal procedure? Who was paying for her dental work? Who was she going to see in New Jersey? The investigators are looking into all these questions and are following leads given to them by Carolyn's family while they safeguard the likely key to the case, the DNA. This is one of the Doe cases that I feel pretty confident saying will be solved. It's just a matter of time. If you are the man who killed Carolyn Eaton, I recommend that you get your affairs in order, because if you're one of the bad guys, they're coming for you. Thank you so much to Coconino County Sheriff's Detective Troy Short for speaking with me about this case. Recently, I let listeners know about a new benefit available to them called an Abjack Insider subscription that's available through Apple Podcasts. An Abjack Insider subscription will give listeners ad-free access to every bit of DNA ID content published, both past episodes and future episodes. It will also give you benefits like early access and bonus content. Head over to Apple Podcasts and click on the DNA ID show page or the Abjack Entertainment channel to start a free trial. Thanks for listening to this episode of DNA ID. If you'd like to listen to the show ad-free and help support the show in the process, please head over to patreon.com/DNAID. And if you're interested in some fun DNA ID merch, visit the store at customizedgirl.com/s/DNAID podcast. To contact the show, please email us at DNAIDpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at DNAID Podcast on Instagram, at DNAID Podcast on Twitter, or on Facebook at facebook.com/DNAIDpodcast. Finally, if you want to visit our website, go to DNAIDpodcast.com. You'll be able to get all the episodes of the show, leave comments on episodes that I can respond to, and you can even leave voicemails. You'll get all the latest news about the show and important updates. find links to our social media, merch, and a lot more. It's really your one-stop shop for everything DNA ID. DNA ID is written, researched, and hosted by me, Jessica Betancourt. It's produced by me and Mike Morford of Abjack Entertainment. Music by Connor Betancourt. Check out our other collaborative podcasts, Scene of the Crime, Missing Persons, and Beyond Bizarre True Crime.